Welcome to episode 120 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. This time, we do sort of a review corner on one of the books that we picked and number two, because it took so damn long to come out. At least we're putting this out before number three. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 120 of Comic Timing. And back with us for the first time in a while on a actual regular episode of Comic Timing and not at a con. First off, Mr. Sean Whalen. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Hey, glad to have you. And also joining us is the Can I think of anything? He's just a sensei of the whatnot.
It's a little harder to pull it off at the top of your head, isn't it?
A little bit. No, let's see. Jim whatnot.
How's it going, eh?
Pretty good. And as usual, Mr. Brent Cassina. What's going on, Brent?
Hey. Goodbye.
Not yet.
You said na-na-na-na-na-na.
I was going Batman. I wasn't going, hey, goodbye, but close enough.
I was thinking na-na-na-na-na.
See, I was thinking Brady Bunch. The na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Oh, what have I done?
I was hoping this wouldn't lead into a conversation about it.
Yeah, you and me three. Well, this episode we are going to be talking about Batman The Dark Knight, issues 1 and 2. By David Finch and Scott Williams. It's written and drawn by David Finch. So this is the first time we've really had a chance to experience his writing for DC. He's done art before, of course, on covers and on Batman. It was a mixed bag for me. But I'll start it off. We'll do overall impressions first on the first two issues and then maybe go a little bit of a summary on issues 1 and 2. We'll start it off with Brent. Brent, what'd you think?
This was billed as a look into the seedier side, more supernatural side, I think is what they really were pumping, of Gotham City with Batman Bruce Wayne. And they're really not there yet, two issues in. So I'm kind of thinking this is just going to be, the David Finch solo book. It's not really going to have any direction, which I didn't really anticipate it doing, but for what it was advertised as, and the supernatural, I pictured Batman taking on vampires right away, and stuff like that. So the stuff outside of the normal DCU, and I know Etrigan makes an appearance in the later issue or whatnot, but I'm not really counting him as supernatural since he's such an established part of the DCU. I was thinking, some cases that Batman hadn't done before.
Right.
Not his Justice League encounter type of stuff.
Yeah, after all, since DC and Marvel were supposed to match each other in every single step, this should have been Batman versus vampires since the X-Men just did it.
Right.
All right, Sean, how about your take real quick?
Well, it was fun. I enjoyed the first issue, but I wasn't, like Brent, I wasn't really sure where it was going. I always like, for myself, like explorations of Bruce's childhood, where we get to see a little bit more of what that was like, because I think there's a lot of years there to really show us something more. And that part I liked, but I wasn't quite sure where it was going. I will say by the end of the second issue, I'm going to disagree with Brent a little bit in that I thought the supernatural with the amulet, especially with what was going on there, and then we get to see Ragman, we started to see more of the supernatural that was promised. I think part of my problem has been with the delay between issue 1 and 2. It kind of took me out of the story. Rereading them together got me back into it, but I do hope that we get this. And I don't know about you guys, and this is probably something we'll talk about along the way. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if there's a fill-in artist or something like that to keep the story going.
They just announced it. Just announced it today that issue 4 is going to have a fill-in artist.
And I'm not against that. Like, keep the, because if there's a story here, don't take me out of it. Just keep me going on some regular schedule with it.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, even Tony Daniel had help for at times when he was doing both the art and the writing.
That was in between arcs, though.
That's true.
The two issues did, for me, read better together, though. Once the second issue was out and I got a chance to read them both back-to-back, it pulled me back into the story, and there was a lot more to like here in that respect. Okay. The delay took me out of it, though.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'll go a little bit more in-depth in a bit. But, Jim, your take.
Well, I'm just still trying to get my hands around the fact that an Arthurian sorcerer who's fused with a demon inside him is not considered supernatural. I think that's kind of like the definition of supernatural. Amulet and Ed in Ragman, you got some pretty good supernatural story. You know, the beginnings laid out for one.
In the realm of DC and Justice League type things, yes, you're absolutely right, literally. But in the realm of things Batman hasn't done or people we haven't seen with Batman before, I'm not counting them as supernatural.
Yeah, well, I think what Brent's I think what Brent is trying to say, and I do kind of agree, is that he was looking for something a bit different, and what we got was another Etrigan story. Well, not yet exactly. I mean, we got an Etrigan appearance, but Etrigan is a pretty well established Batman character at this point.
But we don't know why he's getting involved in this, because he's if you read the look at that passage where he's talking like, I can no longer avoid or ignore the signs. Right. And so there's a reason he's pulling himself into this story. So there's a big bad out there that who knows who that is, or especially who's affecting Ragman. So there's going to be to me, this was a nice taste of some supernatural stuff to come down the pipeline.
Right.
Well, I do actually agree with Brent to a certain extent. We haven't seen a lot of it yet. It's at the end of that second issue, which was the kind of the point that he was making. So I see a little bit of A and a little bit of B in this. I do think that the amulet and what it's doing to Bruce is, to me, where I think we're seeing something a little bit different, because it's what's bringing Etrigan into this and what is happening to Ragman, because Ragman is clearly not Ragman that we're used to seeing. Is that him? Because there's a bestial look about him that's not Ragman.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with him, and does that tie into the amulet and what it's doing to Bruce, or is there something else? So I don't think we've fully seen yet the payoff on where this is going. And I do think we're going back to an issue of, at this point, it would have been nice to have issue 3. So I am glad to see that they're taking a look at that and saying, okay, we need to get a fill-in artist for issue 4. Let's keep this book going and keep people into the story. And I think that is going to improve the overall quality of this title, being able to continue on reading the story for just that reason, to see where is the supernatural element, where is it going?
Right. Well, I think for my general opinions on this, first off, how many former not exactly a girlfriend here, but like people from Bruce Wayne's past can we possibly find at this point? Because I know it's difficult with a character that's been around as long as Batman, to that he's gonna have, you know, people that, I guess, come out of nowhere and are very important in his life. But to me, this almost feels like he's trying to do another Hush here, you know, bring a character in that's his own creation that means something to Bruce. I mean, with that one, it was a childhood, boyfriend, not a boyfriend, but a boy who was a friend. And in this one, it's a girl from his past that we haven't seen before. But it just, I don't know, something feels a little bit forced to me about this.
Yeah, that right there with the bringing in of the girl and the mysterious villain, and you know, it to me it felt like another standard Batman story. Mm-hmm. Whereas I had such high hopes for this book based off of Tony Daniels' success on Batman,
right?
Battle for the Kallaside. I didn't really think it was that bad, but a lot of other people did. Yeah. But really, when he got on Batman and started drawing it, was when it took off, especially recently. So I was hoping that David Finch would be of a similar ilk, and so far, at least his initial idea didn't seem like it was worthy of DC publishing it.
Yeah.
You know, by all means, I love David Finch as a Batman artist. I've been dreaming of him drawing Batman since I saw him on New Avengers, so I'm loving the art fact. Mm-hmm. But the story, until we get to that point, I don't see it in the first two issues where it should be jumping and grabbing you. Because, I mean, let's face it, there was enough story in Jim Lee in Hush and stuff like that, that even if there were substantial delays like there is on this book, and I think, yeah, if memory serves, I think those came out pretty concurrently.
Yeah.
That there was enough of a story that you would want to come back to the next one. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me right now, in between 1 and 2, I didn't really miss it, and now between 2 and 3, I don't really miss the third issue. There's nothing really to keep me coming back to the third one except for that art.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll even say for the art, I mean, while I did enjoy it, I actually kind of would have liked to have seen a different anchor. And that is weird, you know, saying that Scott Williams has the success that he does in the industry, but it kind of, Scott Williams has his house style. You know, he has that I'm going to draw it and make it look like Jim Lee style. And I'm not quite sure that's what I wanted out of David Finch's art here.
Wow.
And I know that they are somewhat similar to begin with in the art styles, but I was looking for something maybe a little bit more grittier than what we got here. And Scott Williams gave me typical Scott Williams fare. So, you know, not the worst art I've seen, but for me at least, not even the best David Finch art that I've seen, which makes me wonder how the story is going to change, you know, with just Finch doing writing and if that's actually going to make the book improve or not.
See, really, I guess I'm at a completely different place on that end because the art for me was a nice draw. Mm-hmm.
I love Williams on here.
Yeah, I thought this was actually a very good looking book. That's always, and actually, I to a certain extent, I agree with Brent in the sense between issue one and two, this was one of those books where I was like, I really enjoyed the artistic experience of issue one. I didn't quite know where the story was going yet. That's why I would have rather had issue, because issue two for me was the selling point of a lot of what Brent was saying, like, where's the supernatural piece? Where's that coming from? We saw a lot more of that in issue two and heading in the direction. I am more interested in issue three now. The gap between one and two, it was like when two came out, I actually had to go back to issue one to reread it to kind of get into what happened and go all through. But after I had both issues together and there was the cliffhanger in two, I'm interested in three. I actually want to see three where I didn't have that experience between one and two. But I will say my consistent experience in both cases was, and I got to give compliments to the colors by Alex Sinclair. I thought this was a very pretty book in both cases. Yeah. I just wasn't as into the story in between issue one and two, and now they're pulling me in. I just wish, I think the timelier release on it would have had a very different experience if it would have been a little closer together.
Right, yeah. Jim, what do you think of the art overall?
Oh, God, I really enjoyed it. This was a nice experience for me, and I think we're all four of us are saying the exact same thing with the gap between one and two did pull me out of the story. Mm-hmm. And I've forgotten what had happened in one.
Same here.
When two came out and I had to reread it and I was talking to Sean, hey, what happened? Oh yeah, it was Killer Croc. Oh yeah, okay. Then I just vaguely remembered stuff. So going back and reading from one to two, that was a really cool experience. And I am a lot more excited to read three than I was as, you know, the memory of one started fading. So it's one of those titles where I'm in for number three. I want to see where this is going. I'm probably in for four or five. I'm in for the first story arc. I want to see where this goes. And part of it is because of I've enjoyed the artwork. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, when they get another artist and on the program, what's going to happen there.
Well, I might actually be out, to be very honest with you. I mean, combined with the delays and everything, I feel like this might have just become a wait for the trade thing for me because I don't know when I'm going to get the next issues. Because, yeah, even with a fill-in artist on four, okay, well, then where does that leave five? Where does that leave six? And so on and so forth. I think it might be a safer bet for me right now, considering where I am in comics and where I am in my stories that I'm enjoying, that this might have just become a wait for the trade book.
See, I don't think this is going to be a wait for the trade for me. And part of it is because if it does keep coming out a little bit later, I have all these other Batman stories that I'm really enjoying, that I'm really into. So it's not like this is my only Batman fix. Okay. So I think for me, waiting for the, you know, the monthly to come out, okay, if it takes 2 months, okay, 3 months, yada, 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 okay, I can keep getting it and keep going through. I'm definitely in for the first story arc just to see where the story goes.
All right. Well, I mean, I might stick with it for all I know. It's just for now, I'm thinking, it's kind of weird to have a book where I have to go back and remind myself what happens with almost every single issue, you know, because like when I knew that we were doing this, I had to go back and remind myself what happened at issue two because I read it a few weeks ago and it wasn't entirely fresh in my mind. I had to go back and remember issue one like that. When issue three comes out, I'm probably gonna have to do it all over again because there's something about this story that isn't making it stick in my head. And some of the better stories that I read do that. You know,
see,
Kat.
I think now I, you know, was complete agreement with you, you know, like a couple when before 2 came out and before I started getting ready for this recording. But now I think I've got enough of it locked in my head that, you know, when 3 comes out, I think I'll be able to jump right into 3 and read 3 and roll through it. I obviously won't know until 3 actually comes out, right. But I think just the way the developments that happened in the story in issue 2 has kind of helped lock this thing in my head.
I think it really depends on what character you're jonesing for. For me, I'm really jonesing for more Bruce. So I might stick with this book because, I mean, frankly, between this one and Batman Inc., you might get a Bruce issue every, you know, 2 months or something like that because Batman Inc. hasn't been the most consistent, timely title lately. But, I mean, you're getting plenty of Dick. He's in every he's in every single book out there. He's got, you know, Batman and Robin, Detective Comics, plus he's in JLA and assorted other appearances and stuff like that. I mean, there's plenty of Dick Grayson out there, but if you're jonesing for Bruce, you got two books that can't seem to keep a consistent schedule.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of disappointing. And on that level, I might stick with it just because I want to know what Bruce is going through right now. But, you know, so far Dark Knight hasn't really stated anything on what the current state of Bruce and Batman Inc. is, I guess it's being covered by the Grant Morrison book, but not really any reference to it. And I understand that that's the whole point of the book, is to be solo Bruce Batman stories, but it's not cutting it out to be a necessary or even a fairly important piece to the Batman universe right now. Whereas if you would read any of the other Dick Grayson books, I think it pretty much goes along with the forward motion of Grant Morrison's idea.
Alfred does mention it, though, because Alfred talks to him, you know, shouldn't you be over in Japan? Shouldn't you be? I mean, he actually directly references and says, shouldn't you be doing these things? And Bruce says, this is something that's very personal to me. This is something that I need to handle myself. I do think that there is room for Bruce stories still set in Gotham, because if we're supposed to believe this city is as corrupt as it is, with as many things going on, you can't think every month that there's only the couple things that Dick's facing each month. Or, you know, I mean, granted, you're right, there's a ton of Dick Grayson books going on right now with him in Justice League and things like that. But still, there's more room in Gotham with all these villains and baddies and new ones being created all the time, you know, for there to be other Bruce stories. I'm with Brent in that I'm hanging on this for new Bruce stories. I'm also I am enjoying this more with issue 2. I want to see the end of the arc because at this point, I feel like I've got a little bit of a clearer idea of the direction they're going, and the amulet is playing heavily into this. And I think that we're going to find out more about Bruce. Only knew this kid before his parents died, mm-hmm. So he hasn't. From everything that I'm gathering from this, he hasn't really seen her since then. So I want to know what happened during the years in between, because she evidently went down to some seriously dark path. Because if she had this amulet, and we've seen what it's done to Bruce, then what did it do to her, and what kind of is there more to her than we're realizing here? Yeah. So I'm curious. I've got questions now where I didn't really have them in the first issue. The second issue, there's more questions, and there's a mystery that's building here. I am a Ragman fan. I was a big Shadow Pact fan.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what's going on with that character. Is that really him, or is that something else?
I don't think it's him. To be serious here, because I there's something about it that seems like it's either he could be possessed. That's also a possibility, but it's either the amulet is messing with him so much that something has taken over, or it's some demon wearing Ragman's clothing.
He reminds me of something from Spawn. You look at him that way.
Yeah.
Well, the Finch style probably doesn't help that much.
Yeah, no.
Finch loves his kind of spawny look.
Yeah, well, Finch is a very old school Image Comics artist. You know, it comes off that way.
But I'm saying, if you look at the face, it's clearly not meant to be a human face. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you see Ragman, usually that's completely covering him.
Right.
We see like the teeth and the mouth and all that going on. So, you know, I think that there's something more going on there. I am leaning more in the direction you are, Ian, that might not be him, or there's something that's seriously been done to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that could definitely tie into why Etrigan felt like, you know, he needed to be a part of this, is that if it is some sort of demon possession, that's usually when that's when Jason Blood turns into Etrigan and jumps into action.
Yeah, I was thinking that the suit could have been acted as a gateway for something to cross over, and just because he's got that natural connection to the other side, so maybe something came through, and when it came through, it took over the suit, and it took over him, and just either that's just an empty suit running around cloaked over a demon type creature, or it's a full on possession.
Okay, now see here's a question for you, and I might be the only one thinking this in this group, but why Dawn Golden? Why not Rachel Dawes?
See, I don't. To me, Rachel Dawes, talk about being forced. I think that would have been. It would have felt like a character that was just forced in for the sake of the fact that she was in the movie. They've never brought Rachel Dawes into the DC Comics continuity, and I got to be honest with you, I find that refreshing. I don't think that every movie or TV created character, like they brought Chloe Sullivan in recently in the Jimmy Olsen story, and I like the way they did it because they aren't trying to make her have some like Smallville-ized backstory. They brought her in as a character that, you know, is a reporter, that's a blogger, you know, she fits into the DC universe as her own character. Yeah, there's a nod to the fact that she was on Smallville, but there's not all of a sudden this magical history with Clark. I think if you put Rachel in there, it's you're either going to come down with a better version of what they did in the film or a watered down version of what they did in the film with her.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I mean, you could disagree with me. I'm not saying that that's the end all be all, but I was thinking of her at first, so that's why I've had a lot of thoughts about this. I'm like, well, this is kind of going down the Rachel Dawes route.
Yeah.
But it's clear they're going in a different direction with this character instead of making her this like love interest that Bruce like is reconnecting with. You know, if they went the DA route with her and do all that, I'm like, oh no, don't do that because. Now, it is going to come down to as a watered down version of the movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole reason that she popped into my head was reading this and thinking, you know, childhood friends that came out of nowhere, that sort of thing. And I know that Rachel Dawes was just created for the movie. She didn't have a backstory in the comics or anything. But, you know, it's just it felt like if they're going to go childhood friend and more importantly, if they're going to drive people to the book, that might have been a way to do it. You know, because I saw the sales on Dark Knight number one, and they weren't nearly what DC was hoping for. So I'm wondering, you know, what exactly could have been done to perhaps draw more people to this book in the first place.
Do you think that is a symptom of this arc, or more so that there's just a lot of Bat books out there?
That could be. Yeah, because right now, I mean, count them. There's Batman Inc., there's Batman, there's Detective Comics. If you want to count Red Robin in there, there's Red Robin, there's Batgirl. You can even count Birds of Prey as a Batman extension.
There's this book.
That's seven already.
Batman and Robin,
that's eight. I think that's all I can think of right now because they canceled everything else.
There's five featuring a Batman.
Yes.
It's not counting Justice League.
Right.
There's five featuring a Batman.
Yeah.
In some capacity, being a main lead character.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing with that because, like Brent, I'm a Bruce fan. So seeing, you know, two Bruce books, I'm like, yeah, I need my Bruce fix in there somewhere. I'm glad to have him back, and I need him in that role. I'm loving what they're doing with Dick Grayson, so I got no issue. But I'm wondering if maybe that is an issue because you've got collectors who are saying, okay, I've been a Batman collector. I've been a Detective Comics collector. I got onto Batman and Robin as a collector when, you know, Dick Grayson was on there during that time away. I'm assuming people jumped onto the Grant Morrison book just to follow where Batman Inc.'s going.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this is just suffering that, you know, can I afford to pick up another book? And, you know, is this going to tie back into kind of what Brent said before? This isn't really tying directly into the Batman Inc. continuity, which I got to be honest, I'm kind of a fan of that. Mm-hmm. Just in the sense that I'm not a fan of these every book having to be interconnected, and I like that this book is trying to do its own stories. I think the delay is really what hurt. I honestly think, and I'm not a big delay fan where I complain about that a lot, but I do think in this story, the way that it was set up, reading issue two, I'm like, oh, I wish this came out sooner because issue two was a selling point for me on this.
And especially since it was originally going to be bi-monthly to begin with, and it was still late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Bi-monthly?
Mm-hmm. At least from what I remember, that was the original plan, was that it was supposed to be bi-monthly because they knew David Finch takes a while. And then he took even longer than the bi-monthly.
I'm also wondering if it's the state of storytelling in the Batman universe. You know, Batman Inc. aside, the whole universe-driving direction, over the past, you know, year and a half, in Batman and Robin, we've got short, compartmentalized stories that, you know, sometimes they came out like clockwork, other times they didn't, but it was short stories, three issues, you know, so on and so forth, 16 in. And then you had that fill-in with McDaniel and Paul Cornell, which was cool. And then now you have Tomasi taking over, doing the same thing, you know, three to four issues. And, you know, Batman Inc. seems to be hopping around all over the place, not really sticking to a long format story, whereas Tony Daniels kind of continuing the same thing he's been doing since the beginning. So that's kind of, you know, you expect that from him, but his book comes out consistently enough that it's not as big of an issue. But, you know, anytime you're reading the main Bat book with a team up or something like that, it's been short story. So then now we get two issues drawn out long apart from another, you know, release-wise, as well as not moving the plot along very much, like we've been used to featuring, you know, a Batman on some great adventure. I think that might have a little bit of an effect, too. Just in the back of our mind, we're used to this other thing, and here now with Bruce, we're getting something different.
Well, and I'll also say that one of my main problems with this story so far is actually for the portrayal of Penguin seems a little bit off to me. After the past couple of times we've seen him, both in Birds of Prey and in Batman, it almost feels like David Finch, you know, needed a guy to be a sort of a crime boss or a driving, you know, villain force, and decided I'm just gonna put Penguin in there and go with it.
Well, although Birds of Prey did take him to this creepy level that we're seeing now, I do think, if at least in my mind, how I'm trying to put it chronologically, I would take Birds of Prey being the appearance right before this one, and everything before, predating Birds of Prey, because she took him down a creepy level in that issue. I actually liked the portrayal of Penguin here. I do agree with you, though, and I'm not disputing the fact that he's different here.
Yeah.
I actually like that it seems to be Gail Simone made him a little creepier, and then this is taking him back to being someone who's creepy and formidable. It seems to be a nice progression for him, because for a while there, Penguin was a joke when he was running the Iceberg Lounge. And it just seemed to be like he was skirting this line of, is he noble? Is he evil? He's kind of playing both sides of the fence, which that worked for a while. But there comes a point where now I think with the state of Gotham, where does Penguin fit into all that? Iceberg Lounge fit during that time with the political status of Gotham's underworld.
Right.
It doesn't fit now. You know, ever since Black Mask took over and then that all fell down on him, Gotham's in a different state of flux for these villains, and Penguin needs to find a new role. And I think we're seeing some of that here. So I liked the creep factor. I actually liked the way he was drawn, too, because he looks like he's somebody who can be terrorizing. And I think we need to see more of that from Penguin. It's like, why do I feel that Penguin is one of Batman's major rogues? Well, we need to start heading in that direction. So I was glad to see more of that here. And it's something I actually, not just in this book, I actually want to see more in the Batman universe, is a reestablishing of him as this creepy. It was something in Birds I really enjoyed. So when you mentioned Birds, I'm like, oh, yeah, I was like, finally, we're getting this guy creepy again. And he actually feels like he's somebody that you would be afraid to be around. When he was running the Iceberg Lounge, you didn't have that feel all the time. Or like you could go and negotiate with Penguin. This is not a guy you're going to negotiate with.
Well, they seem to be doing that with multiple villains, because, I mean, they don't seem to know exactly what direction they want to take Riddler down, whether or not they want him to still be that man that, you know, treads the line between villain and detective, or whether they want him to be back to being, you know, the Edward Nygma that we knew 10, 20 years ago. And now here we are with Penguin deciding where he's going to go next. It is a bit of a state of flux for some of the characters in the DC universe when it comes to villains. Jim, what do you think of the portrayal of Penguin here?
I was kind of liking what we were seeing with the creepy factor, you know, echoing what Sean was saying, but I was also thinking that Amulet, You know, we saw it affect Bruce. We saw it take Bruce to a level where he's breaking bones in the Penguin to, you know, question, you know, in his effort to question where she was. And that's just way over the top for Bruce. Well, if it could corrupt Bruce, if it could make Bruce, you know, go over the edge, what would it do to this little creepy guy? Because he's been in possession of that bad boy, and he currently probably is right now. So I was kind of wondering if not only are we seeing, again, a nice resurgence of the creepy evil version of the Penguin, I'm wondering if he's under some influence as well.
Hmm. Yeah, well, which does bring the question, just how many people in this story are under the influence? You know, because with Killer Croc, and he was on Venom in this yeah. story. So I mean, that's a little bit different. But you know, what drove him to do that in the first place? Maybe it was the influence of the amulet. I mean, we don't know just how far this amulet is reaching for the characters of this story.
I think why I'm in a different place on this book than I think what some of you guys are expressing. This book reminds me a lot of Legends of Dark Knight, and I'm not saying that. There's some brilliant stories in Legends of Dark Knight, and this could wind up being a really good one when it's done. I'm not there yet with this story, but I meant if I read the entire series of Legends of Dark Knight. Some of the stories started off with a bang right away where you knew the direction of it, where it was going. Other stories, it was a slow build where it took a couple issues, and by the time you were, you know, done with the arc, you could look back and say, okay, I get what the writer was doing, and this is a cool story contained when it's done. I think this is one of those where when the arc's done, like a lot of these questions as far as was the Penguin touched by the amulet? Well, because I wasn't thinking that, but when Jim threw that out there, I'm like, well, I could see that being a possibility. Maybe that's why we're seeing some of the creep factor of him, and some of this is coming from the amulet with him. Was Croc affected by it? You know, is this what's going on with Ragman? You know, who knows? As this goes on, I have a lot of questions now that I'm curious about, but a lot of the arcs and Legends of the Dark Knight had that. And by the time you were done, there was a payoff. So I think there's a part of me that's anticipating that payoff. And I like Batman stories like this. I don't, you know, we've got like Detective Comics right now that has this big, long, year-long arc that I'm loving to death. I think this has got just, it's one of the, I think it's the flagship Dick Grayson book right now with what's going on in Detective Comics. For me, that's my book. And I'm loving all the Dick Grayson books, but that one's standing out to me just a little bit more. You got the Tony Daniel book that has these like 5-6 issue arcs, which I'm a fan of those too. You know, fits nice into a trade. It comes with a nice ending. There's a continuity that continues on from that, but they wrap up real nicely there, and you have a real good indicator all the way through where it's going. And then we have the shorter form stories going on in Batman and Robin, and I like that from that series. I like the different Batman stories because to me, if you're going to have all these books, if they're all doing the same type of stories being told the same way, there's really not a lot of reason to have them.
Oh, of course.
I like that they're trying some different things. Batman Inc., one of the things that I'm liking there, Brent was talking about it, another like 2-to-3-issue arc, actually, we're really dealing with 2 issues at the most, story. But there is this larger overarching story of what is Bruce gathering these people for? Because he started to make more and more references to this thing that's coming. This big battle that he's got, that he's waging, he's planning for something huge. So that's building to something. Don't know what yet, but I'm anxious to see what it's building yeah. towards.
Well, I'm wondering, I mean, I don't think it will, but I'm wondering just how much what he's building towards involves Flashpoint. You know, with this, you know, overarching change that's going to be happening in the DC Universe, is this one of the things that he saw while going through time the way he was? You know, was this one of the visions he had?
So is that story ultimately leading to, are they going to converge?
Yeah, I'd be very curious, because I mean, from the looks of the Batman that we see in Flashpoint, it is going to be, you know, somewhat of a different Batman, you know, different chest symbol and all that. But I'm wondering whether or not he actually got to see, you know, what happens after Flashpoint, and if that's going to somehow tie into this. Well, I mean, I'm grasping at straws here because we don't know until it actually happens, but I'll be curious to see just how much that plays into the overarching DC universe as a whole, including the Bat universe.
Hmm.
Yeah, you never know. Brent, what's your overall feel? Because I know you're a Batman fan and everything, but What do you like more right now? Do you like the ones that feel like they play more into continuity, or are you just looking for good Bat stories?
I'm looking for good stories, but if there's a direction, I think somehow they should relate to the direction. But right now, the most of the ones I'm digging is Batman and Robin and Batman Inc. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones I'm digging the most. I've heard good things about Detective Comics, but I just like, I can't do another book with Dick in it. I mean, nothing against him. I didn't want to be getting everything just for the sake of getting everything, and I was like, that looks like something I could cut or
just
wait.
A little bit too much Dick.
Yeah, definitely.
Dude, if there's one book that I think that's being published Bat-related right now,
it's that one.
Detective Comics. I'm a Bruce fan, which sounds like you and I are very in sync on that, and we're more leaning towards, you know, we need the Bruce fix and all that. I don't know if I'm right on that, but I know you're an old school Bat fan like I am. And the Detective Comics right now is making me a believer. that book is brilliant. I mean, it's what, even if you don't pick it up in the singles, if you find room in your budget to pick up a trade just to check it out and see if it's for you, that arc, it's got a big build. It's a big building story, but every issue, you're just pulled into this intense mystery. Even when they had the co-feature in the back with Jim Gordon, the co-feature integrally plays into the main feature of the story. So it's not separate. The stuff that's going on with Jim Gordon and I don't want to reveal too much of that because you're not reading it, but there's a co-feature with Jim Gordon in the back that plays into some of Jim Gordon's history that is coming heavily back into Gotham, that's bringing him in as a major player. So it's something that, and I would, for any of your listeners out here, if you're not reading Detective Comics right now, the artwork by Jock is gorgeous. David Baron's on colors, and Scott Snyder, who's writing American Vampire right now, is just hitting a home run. This is a book that I'm gripping. Right, it's my Batman fix. I mean, that's a Gotham story that's set in Gotham, and I want to do half the stuff that he has Batman doing in that book.
I'm wondering whether or not they're going to include the Commissioner Gordon stuff in the trade for Detective, or whether that's going to be something separate. Because one of the things that I've been doing lately is I've been getting a lot of stuff out of the library, and that'll probably be one of the ones that will hopefully wind up out of the library at one point or another.
I honestly, it's one of those where if they don't collect it in some way where people know that you need to read that, mm-hmm. with the Batman, with the detective story that's in there, they're doing, I think the readers are huge. They have to collect that with that backup story somehow contained either in one of the trade volumes or labeled that it is part of that volume.
I hope so.
Because they actually, when the co-feature was canceled, they pulled the rest of it into the main issues, and they're integrating it into the story. Oh. They have the same art team that was doing the co-feature, that was doing that story as it integrated in, and then they went back to the main art team. But that story is being folded in to what is going on in the main Detective Comics story. It's like you can't separate it. You need that story in order to understand what's really going on. To me, that was a great use of the co-feature, because it was developing something in the back while something was going on in the front big time. And when they converge, it's just awesome.
Well, good. Hopefully that's what they'll do then. Hopefully they will put them both in there, because from the sounds of things, it is very integral to that. But I'm more going back to Dark Knight here. How long are the story arcs supposed to be? Because I'm not quite sure on that. Is there a number on this in the front? Did I miss that? Or for what we're reading right now, this
no, I think it just had a, I think it just had an issue title, right?
It just had an issue title. Okay, yeah, because it does make me wonder just how.
No, in Golden Dawn Part 2 was an issue 2, so it was listed as Part 2.
Okay,
so it doesn't say 2 of or anything though.
No, because it makes, I am wondering how long this story arc is going to last, whether it's just going to be a 6-issue arc to do the trade, or whether this is going to be a shorter arc and then, you know, move on to something else. Because, I mean, it feels like David Finch is building to something big here. Whether or not it's going to be, you know, longer than 6 issues or shorter than 6 issues, I have no idea. But it does make me wonder just how long this story arc is going to be drawn out.
Issue 5 is billed as the penultimate issue, so 6 issues.
6 issues, okay. All right. Yeah, and issue 5 is solicited for when?
July. so is issue 4.
Okay.
The same.
Okay. Yeah, leaning more towards that trade.
But they actually, in going back to the whole bi-monthly thing, They're listing issue 3 May 25th. Mm-hmm. So that would mean we skip June. Right. Issue 4 is July 27th. Issue 5, it may be that they just haven't readjusted it on the site, mm-hmm. is listed July 27th. So they might be going to, you know, that would be then moved till September.
Or David Finch is simply just focusing on drawing issue 5 and they got somebody else to draw issue 4, which is possible.
Could be.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm guessing that's why he left the Brightest Day covers and we've had those great Gary Frank ones.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. No, because I mean, you know, if Finch had his other stuff to do, then yeah, do them. But yeah, let's go a little farther here. What'd you think of the characterization of Gordon in this arc so far? Because I that's actually been my favorite part. I feel like this is pretty true Commissioner Gordon here. Same thing with Alfred. Both of them feel like they've been very much the Alfred and Gordon I like to see out of my Bat titles. So I've been. Probably that's been my highest point in these issues so far.
The Alfred with, you know, like when he was having that talk with Bruce and Bruce was very dismissive of him. I think that's great because of the fact that when you see Alfred with Dick Grayson, you're seeing such a different type of conversation. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm enjoying the contrast between the two different Batman and their relationship with Alfred, because Dick is, you know, he's your big brother, the kind of guy that you can chat with. Yet when he puts on the bat suit, he's become a very believable, very strong Batman. Yet we haven't lost like he was Nightwing at some point. But when we see Bruce back, even though he is like this Batman that's jet setting that we're seeing in Batman Inc., I like that we see here that he's still, you know, you're not going to hang out with Bruce and be able to have a really long, deep conversation when Bruce doesn't want to. And this is a great example. This is something that's personal to him. Bruce doesn't want to open up. And I mean, that to me is, it's great Alfred, because that none of that works if Alfred doesn't offer some balance by playing off it. You got to chuckle with Alfred in those moments.
Right.
And Gordon being the tried and true, I echo your sentiments on Gordon. He is your, Gordon is one of my all time favorite supporting cast characters. And when he wasn't in the books, when they retired him, quote unquote, you know, for that time that they did that, it was so great, the issues here and there where they'd bring Gordon back in, because I missed him so much. And to see him here and in this role where you can really see why he's police commissioner and what he brings to the table is, I think, one of the strengths in the Bat books right now. We're seeing a lot more Jim Gordon. We're seeing a lot of more Jim Gordon doing his job and being the old school cop that's in there. And you need somebody not corrupt in Gotham.
Yeah, there's like three of them.
Yeah.
Okay, question for you. As we're talking about cops in Gotham, the new guy that they've introduced here, Forbes, the lieutenant who wants to get on the case, then at the end of issue 2, you know, basically the mayor assigns him to the case and pulls Gordon from it. That's the guy I'm wondering, is he being introduced just for part of this story? Is he going to have a direct connection with it? Or are they introducing a new cop into the Batman universe?
You know, they could go either way with this, Jim. I mean, because they've introduced new cops into the Batman universe before that you've never seen again. So I think it's more up to whether or not the other writers want to play with them or not, or whether this is just David Finch's creation and you only see him there. I'll be wondering just how well David Finch writes him here, because it might actually literally be selling the character to the rest of the Bat creators. If it's written well, because, you know, I mean, think of the way that Montoya started off back in the day. You know, who knew that she was going to turn out the way that she did? You know, she was just a character that was introduced into the animated series that people latched onto and eventually made her way into the regular Batman titles and really never left after that. You know, sure, she's evolved into the Question now, but some characters do wind up so popular that they wind up being used over and over again.
You know, whether he's worm food or not, no, with Forbes, you bring up Montoya, and I think of like Bullock and Montoya and Crispus Allen and that whole era that led to Gotham Central. I don't think you necessarily need to do another. I mean, I would, if they redid Gotham Central and they put the right writing team on it, I would read it in an instant. But you don't necessarily need to do that, but I think it's important to take a look at why did Gotham Central launch and why do people still talk about it? It's because we want to know more about Gotham's police department. So I think they do. If Forbes is only for this arc and, you know, we're going to find out that he's corrupt or bad or whatever, and then he ends up dying in this or whatever. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but, you know, I'm kind of either he's going to stick or he's not, or he's for this story or he's not. I would like to see more development of officers that have a regular reoccurring role in the Bat universe, where we get to start learning and getting to know some of them, and they have different quirks. I'm actually enjoying in Batgirl getting to know, you know, she's got a little bit of a supporting cast that's going, and we're starting to get to know some of those characters. I would like to see more of that in Gotham, where they're characters that you see just gradually developed. You're like, oh, okay, you know, because they've got to start having run-ins with some of the same officers, especially Dick. Because Dick is more of the public face of Batman in the sense that he does interact with the police. So and they seem to really like his openness. So I think in I would like to see in some of the Dick Grayson books, I'm not saying you have to do it in all of them, but a cast of Gotham City police officers that are introduced, some of them who are corrupt, some of them who are tried and true, like your Renee Montoya's back in the day. I love her as a question. I'm not taking anything away from that. Yeah. But when her and Crispus were partners, you could follow them and rally behind them and go, okay, when these guys are on the scene, they're going to do things by the book. And they're not going to be afraid to speak their mind. And Gordon respects them for it. And they're not afraid to get in the face of the corrupt guys. I want to see some of that. I like that interaction. Even if it's only on a crime scene sequence here and there, let's get to know some of these characters in the background.
Right. Yeah. Well, Brent, what do you feel about that? Would you like to see this be a new Bat character?
I'm still wondering where Jason Bourne went.
Yeah.
So based on that, I don't really have high hopes for it. Honestly, the thing I think that worked with Renee and Crispus was that they're in Detective Comics. It was Ed Brubaker, right, when they started out. And sure. Then I think it was the trickle. They were in that pretty consistently, especially during the murder storyline. And then it trickled out into some other books slowly. And then I think Gotham Central is really what kicked it off from there. The animated series and stuff like that helped too. Just knowing Montoya, but honestly, you have to have something that comes out consistently for a new character to pick up or have a hook for the character. Another Gotham cop doesn't make him interesting. I mean, look at Jason Bard. He was interesting. He had a cane and did work for Batman on the side, and this guy is just another white guy cop in Gotham. I'm not really particularly interested in them. There's no hook, you know. She's not a gay lesbian Hispanic cop. I know two of those things are the same thing.
Renee wasn't that when she was introduced, though.
No.
Right, but eventually she developed a hook, or she was a little bit different. Harvey's a fat guy. You got a black cop. You got a woman cop. You know, it's all something that's not generic, I guess. And this guy just seems generic. We already have our white guy cop, it's Jim Gordon, you know?
I totally need you to explain every single archetype from now on, because I think you do that better than anyone.
And that's why I'm not saying that it has to be this guy. And I'm also not saying that it needs to be Bard, because I don't know. I'm not a big Bard. I enjoyed, like, the backup with him, but he wasn't somebody I ever saw continuing on and having, like, a long-term regular role.
You just want more cops, period.
More cops that we gradually get to know. And maybe, you know, just have them appear regularly and see who the fans stick to.
Yeah, well how about
sometimes characters get, you know, sometimes characters, especially with letter columns now and, you know, with forums and all that stuff, what cops are appearing regularly that fans are talking about? And maybe those characters, there's a lot of characters that just need to be supporting cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, they appear in arcs, and when Brent's talking about with regular appearances, if you have a set of regular cops that appear and are used in the Bat books and have a defined character study of these that each of the writers can use, there's some consistency to those characters if they're used in Detective Comics, if they're used in Batman and Robin, if they're used in Batman. And then you can get to know these characters, even if you're only reading one of the books, that's something we'll all have in common. Like, if I'm reading Detective and Brent's reading Batman and Robin, we'll know some of these cops. I'm not saying every cop in Gotham has to be defined. But I'm saying, like, maybe put two or three characters who, like, and actually Brent's making a brilliant point here, who are different, who are unique, who've got some kind of hook to them. And you get to know, and you actually care about, like, oh, cool, Batman's interacting with this person again. I actually care. I'd like to see more of that. I think there's some room for it.
There's room, but there's already so many Gotham cops that there are. I mean, you have Crispus is gone. Obviously, Montoya is gone. Harvey's still around, and I think he's underused. And maybe some of that's because he was the idiot in the animated series. But there were tons of other background players and side cops in Gotham Central that you could pull out at any time that have had character study or stories like what you're just talking about.
I guess what I'm saying is do it then. We don't see them.
Right. Well, I'm sad. I'm still sad that Officer Harper transferred to Metropolis. You know, I was really enjoying in Robin, you know, Jamie Harper. She was a great character. And you know, once she moved to Metropolis, she sort of went to the background a little bit. I mean, yeah, sure, she was, you know, interacting with Mon-El, but now that Mon-El's storyline is over, I don't really see her around that much. So how about bringing her back to Gotham and just using her? Because I really liked her as a character.
At the end of that story arc, she left.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of ended her character. She's not coming back to Gotham.
Which saddens me, because where's she going to go? Was she just exited out of the books entirely?
Well, she left with Guardian.
Yeah, and where are they now?
Right. Well, I don't know if they had any future plans for the character, but you know, they kind of, you know, they implied, you know, she's got some, you know, maternal stuff coming up.
Right.
They
right.
did, but that didn't go the direction that they were hoping it would.
Right,
fans
right.
didn't take to it. The whole idea behind that, I mean, if we're going to talk about Harper and what happened there, mm-hmm. The idea behind Guardian and what they were trying to do there is they were hoping that some of these Superman supporting cast characters would become fan favorites. You know, the ones that they put in the Superman books, taking over his role there, and that they would then launch into their own series. They were trying to expand the Superman line the way that they've done the Batman line.
And it didn't take.
Yeah. And that was that. So the idea was there a plan for Harper? Probably to follow along with Guardian and just to continue to be a part of that whole thing. And when that fell apart, so did that plan. But there's room then. Great example of a character. Can we find a way to bring her back? Maybe.
I would love it. But I would love it.
It felt like they jettisoned all those characters when they blew up New Krypton, though.
Yeah.
It was like, you blew up New Krypton, well, then the past stories for the whole year don't matter.
Yeah.
Send everybody back, you blow up New Krypton, it's back to status quo. I think at that, I mean, because I liked those characters.
I did too.
But, you know, I wasn't able to go to much conventions because, frankly, they only have one in all of Florida, biggest tourist city in the world, but it's a different story. So I don't know where fans would get to voice their opinions when it seems like any of the panels that you read about on Newsarama or comic book resources and stuff, they're just asking where the stories are going next. And and DC wastes time with, we can't comment on that. We can't comment on that rather than actually creating some discussion. They'd rather answer the fan questions. The fan questions are the same every single time.
Yeah. What happened there, though, let's be honest, what happened there, though, unfortunately, because I'm with you, Brent, and we're totally in sync. I was enjoying where those characters are going in the direction, and I would like to see more of them, too. But the honest issue was sales numbers. It's not something that I really focus on myself. I read. I enjoy the books that I like. If it's not selling well, I still enjoy reading that book, and I love those characters. Unfortunately, in those cases, the sales numbers when those characters were going through were not as strong as they were hoping for. And that's where those characters go? I think the jettisoning of them was exactly what happened.
They go where Maggot and Cecilia Reyes were hiding for a while.
Well, apparently, Chambers coming back, so you know who knows.
Yeah. Hey, I'm happy about that.
No Mouth.
Yeah, Mr. No Mouth himself. Good to see him back. And what do you mean? The status quo didn't come back for Superman. He's walking now.
Oh, well, okay. Big, you know, as soon as that's over, it's back to status quo.
Yeah,
I mean, Action Comics is losing the best thing that happened to it. And, you know, since Jeff Johns jumped on with Andy Kubert when the one issue that was on time, you know, with Lex Luthor, I'm sad to see that go. I thought they could have continued that for at least another 12 issues.
I agree. It's
so strong, and I thought people were reacting to it only to throw it back into this reign of doomsday crap. It's just a sad thing to see.
Yeah. Well, Let's not forget to mention, by the way, going back to the issues, my favorite two lines in the whole book. Was that the Batmobile I just saw drive away? Just get out of here, you lummox. Now, are we... Because the last time we saw somebody do something to the Batmobile, that person became a Robin. So, yeah.
And this one looks like a female to me.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So,
is there a chance that Bruce may be getting his own Robin?
Oh, please no.
No.
I'm not against the idea of introducing like this character as being somebody who might appear every so often. I don't want to, like, right now to me, I'm very happy with this. Now, I'm a fan of the supporting Bat cast. I love the new Batgirl. I love Tim as Red Robin. I like what's going on with Damian. But we don't need, and I honestly, when I say please no, I don't think it's going there. But I would be disappointed if it did.
Yeah, I'm just more curious who this person is, you know, because you got to have some major tech savvy to break into the Batmobile, and this girl looks like she can't be any older than like 13 or 14. So is she using somebody else's tech to get in, or is this her own, you know, joyride going on? I guess we'll find out soon enough.
I would just rather David Finch have spent the time not drawing those pages and then going back in issues 1 and 2 and drawing Batman's knuckles. Because and I was paging through issue 1 back when we were talking about the art, and of course the distinction between Bruce's suit and Dick's suit is the chest emblem, and Bruce has the piping along the suit, you know, and he doesn't wear underwear outside of his pants anymore, but the most significant thing was the gauntlets, and the gauntlets had they had a more Batman Begins feel to me, a little bit of you know, some armor plating on the top of the hands, so you don't break the bunch of bones that are in the top of your hand, and knuckles, like, you know, a lot more armored gloves. And it started out on the cover, looked great. First couple pages in issue 1, they're there. Thing that didn't, but otherwise it just looks like one of Batman's gloves. And I looked at some other artists, it looks the same. And then by halfway through issue 1, when he's up close against Croc and he's holding up that, that syringe or whatever, that pen or whatever that is, I think it's a syringe, it's gone. Batman's knuckles are gone. So, and then they're not even to be seen in issue 2, and it just looks like Batman has these weird things on top of his gloves. And the piping is nowhere to be found.
They're obviously retractable.
I'm just kind of wondering where the artistic vision is. If you're going to go to such lengths they're on the cover of issue 2, no doubt about it, but if you're going to go to such lengths to make Bruce's costume so different and so recognizable, then the artist should bother to draw it.
Yeah. Well, isn't that on as much the inker and the colorist as it is the artist? Because sometimes, you know, and I would think this is the case with David Finch because he is trying to do this as fast as possible, that he might have left some stuff out, but... Yeah, if you're the inker or you're the colorist, you catch that and you draw it in, and it's there.
Do we see it in issue 2 on him at all?
No.
Piping?
No, only the cover. Oh, the piping? I don't know. On the cover, it's there if you look really closely.
I just want to look through issue 2.
I'm looking at it specifically, the title page, where you actually see the DC Comics Presents The Dark Knight in Golden Dawn Part 2. It's barely there. Yeah, it's not there at all. It looks like a 1960s Batman costume with a glowing chest piece.
I'm wondering if part of the decision to remove that, because you figure at this point we've got to streamline a little bit to get this book moving as far as time wise. So I mean, I guess if you take a look, agreeing with what is being said here, issue 1 in the beginning of the book, you know, about the halfway point through, you're seeing a lot of this. As it got towards the end of the book, and then we're seeing in issue 2, those little things being removed. I liked them. I thought they were kind of cool. I thought that was a neat little touch because it, we talked about functional costumes recently on one of our shows, and it to me it felt like functional. It felt like, okay, we're adding a little bit of, you know, something that Bruce is like, if I'm going to do a new suit, let's refine it a little bit and make it a little bit more functional. Let's give it a little bit more of an edge. So I actually liked the concept. But I'm guessing the disappearing was going towards, okay, we've got to simplify this a little bit so we can, you know, we get, because we got to keep going and right. get the art out so we get the story going.
Even if you, you know, it doesn't take much for the inker to draw two lines. Then you would have at least had something that looks like piping. Even if it looks like it's still part of the fabric, at least if they're lines, they're sort of there.
I'm not arguing the artist. I mean, that's fine. Mistakes happen. It's just a minor nitpick to me. But if we're talking about streamlining, then it should have been a decision earlier on. Someone at DC going, hey, Yannick, that looks a little too complicated for the freaking hands,
and
dude.
Every other artist is drawing it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure Chris Burnham is drawing it.
I don't have my issue to pull out, but I would gather to say maybe. I know Yannick was drawing it.
I honestly didn't notice it going away.
Because you're used to seeing Bruce as Batman. That's why. I mean, it looked like a standard Bruce suit. You know, it looked like a standard Batman suit with a extended chest piece. That's it. But I kind of like it. I mean, we brought it up on the episode of Raging Bullets that we were on, that I really liked the new look, and I like to see it drawn right. That's all. You know, I mean, it is a nitpick, but it's the sort of thing that, you know, makes me want to go back to a comic, is that if I see consistency, that makes me happy. And that's obviously not what we got out of this comic all the time when it comes to the art.
Well, it does seem like the new consistency, though, in this book at least, is the gloves without it. Because in issue two, it's consistent all the way through issue two.
Right. Yeah, which means that it is also possible that someone noticed that it wasn't drawn there and was like, okay, I guess we better keep this. I don't know. We are nitpicking here.
It's an interesting point. Addressing your point, it wasn't consistent in issue one, but it is consistent in issue two.
No, you're right.
Yes, it is consistent in issue two. But the thing with me is, it's just like, you go to such lengths to make his costume identifiable, but the further you move away from that, and he's keeping the bigger pieces on the gloves and the ankles and stuff like that, extra protection. But now, because the gloves just look like regular gloves like he had before, now it just looks like you're going to the Night Quest Batman, which I love, before he got his whole suit and he just had those gauntlets and the regular Batman costume. Look totally stupid. And it's just like, either Batman is going to armor up, I would think that he would do it visibly so it shows as an intimidation factor, or he would have it built in that you wouldn't notice as a, thinking, oh, well, he doesn't have any armor on type thing. He wouldn't put out half of it and then say, oh, well, you know, that's all I got.
Yeah. And especially if you're going to draw it on the covers.
Well, the covers, remember, are put out long before the issue is.
I completely
understand that. Yes, I completely understand that. It's just still part of that consistency that I like to say.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but what I'm guessing was they took a look at the interiors and said, we've got to get the interiors consistent. And it looks like the change that was made in issue one, they said, well, fine, if you're going this route, you have to keep it inside the issue. Yeah. I'm making an assumption there. I have no idea. Right. I could be totally wrong on this.
Yeah. No, I know. But it does bring me to the question, should it not be a fill-in artist? Should it be a new artist, period? Should David Finch just be writing? Because obviously from the looks of it, A, he can't keep up the pace, and B, his art in some ways, even though it is still nice to look at, is suffering.
Really?
I don't think it's suffering. You
know, first of all, I will agree with what you're saying as far as those not being there and they remove them. But to me, I've really enjoyed the art all the way through this. You're right. There is that inconsistency in issue one where they took those away. And I noticed it because I really, one of the draws for me in this, like I made my comment where between issue one and issue two, you know, I wasn't totally into the story yet, but after I got issue two, I did get into it. But one of the consistencies in my whole experience has been, I've really enjoyed the art. And in issue one, even though there was that part, and I agree with you 100%, that inconsistency was there, I still thought the art was gorgeous. Yeah. It's a nitpicky thing, but I noticed it too. I'm with you, so I'm not disputing you. But I think, though, we've established on this, you're in a different place on the art. And there's nothing wrong with that. We've all got our own opinions.
Right, yeah.
I liked the art. It wasn't... I don't know if it doesn't sound like it was your cup, because you were talking about the inking, how it wasn't for you. So, yeah. And we're all entitled to our own opinions. So I don't want to sound like disputing that.
For me, it's just this felt a little too 90s for me. That's all. You know, and as a 90s kid, it's funny to say that, but it's just like, I've seen tendencies in David Finch's art to go back to that image style he had when he was a younger artist, and I feel like he's drawing on that a little bit too much here. But, you know, that's, again, totally my opinion, and I'm okay that you guys like the art, and I'm not saying it's horrible art or anything, I'm just saying it's just not the best David Finch art that I've seen, for me, at least. So, there you go.
See, for me, the amount of detail is not even just on the characters, but in the backgrounds. I think his artwork is really, I don't think it's suffering at all. I'm just really digging everything he's doing.
No, it's good. It's serviceable art for me, but, you know, whatever.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. No, it's like as I talk about it more, I'm even going farther back on what I was saying. But
yeah, I mean, to me, the art here is strong. I mean, the last Finchwood stuff we've seen was what, Ultimatum or something like that, and that art for me was serviceable David Finch. This here to me is David Finch return to form.
No, the last David Finch art that I saw was on Batman the Return, and I liked that a lot.
I'm talking like, you know, more than a one issue thing.
Yeah,
I guess.
No, I get that. It's just I can tell when David Finch had enough time to draw things exactly the way that he probably wanted to.
And, dude, I so want to get into that Batmobile. I mean, I'm looking at that thing. I'm like, that is like, and that's one of the vehicles that for me, my favorite experience with Batman is when an artist has done a cool looking Batmobile. And I get the guy trying to rip it off because I want to.
that is a nice Batmobile. I'll give you that. And the backgrounds are nice too. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things that maybe if I look back on it later, I'll think different of it. But
you know, can we talk? There's a character we didn't really talk about much art wise in Croc. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of his portrayal of Croc in this? Because we've got a Croc that's jacked up on a street grade level Venom, which I kind of like that concept because Croc to me. Croc should be a character in Batman's universe that he's kind of like Batman's Hulk, just in the sense that you want to feel like Batman has a tough time with Croc. And for a while, it seemed like Croc has been too easy to defeat. I don't know if anybody else has felt that way. And this version of Croc, and especially with it being a street-grade Venom, not being Bane's, you know, where Croc's going completely nuts from it, I like that we're seeing a Croc that we're used to. But yet, Bruce really had a tough time with him. And if it wasn't for circumstances of being in the right location at the right time and Bruce being able to use his environment, Croc was really having his way with him. And I like seeing that from a character like Croc. But what did you guys think of the look of Croc? Did you like that? Didn't you? And there's no right or wrong answer. For me, I liked it. I thought it was a good-looking Croc.
I liked it. It actually reminded me a lot of Croc and Hush, actually.
No. I think why you're saying that is because the inker and the colorist are the
same. That's not why I'm saying that. I'm thinking more towards the jacked up Croc because this isn't the first.
No, at least I guess the face wise Croc and Hush look more like a horse than this guy.
Well, either way, I liked it. All right,
but it was funny. If you look at Killer Croc, it's funny the way he's been from Hush. He was Horse Croc. Horse Croc, that's one. And then you go to Broken City right after that ended with Azzarello and, what's his name? The guy from 100 Bullet, Risso. And then it's back to this Croc with he's like pimped out Croc with like missing teeth and stuff. And then you go, fast forward maybe to Countdown or those Croc things they had in the back of some Batman issues a while back where he was trying to get back from Horse Croc to regular Croc. And then in Countdown, I think he was Horse Croc and now he's... Jacked out Croc.
Well,
it's just interesting. It's like, okay, where are we going to go?
When he says Horse Croc, I'm like sitting here, I'm thinking of a Mr. Ed episode. It's like, I'm Mr. Croc. And he's right. I'm not arguing with you. You're right. He did look like that. He had that horse-like feature to him.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Beta Ray Bill, I guess, but horse is easier to say than Beta Ray Bill Croc. Beta Ray Bill Croc.
I think I do prefer a Croc that looks more human. Because, he is a human being. You know, he might be mutated, but he's human.
Well, and it gives it more of an... I think this here definitely gives him more of the idea of, yes, it really could be a skin condition and not an actual, like, mutation or whatever, like the last one.
Yeah. Jim?
Because he has a real nose here.
Right.
See, I like the actual mutation version of him. Now, this does look pretty cool because it does look like enough of a mutation where he does kind of look like a alligator man type of thingy. So I'm cool. I like the look of it, but I've always thought with Croc, I don't want him to just be a guy with a bad skin rash. I want him to look freaky, supernatural, mutated. I want to think at any moment the guy's going to turn full alligator on you.
So you don't want him to be halitosis man?
Yeah, I do not want that at all. I want solid green skin that has actual scales, not flaky skin.
Yeah, well, I mean, even doing a search for Killer Croc on Google Images, you see, like, literally every single artist has a different interpretation on Croc. Mm-hmm. Like, he's never the same from issue to issue. From the looks.
Are you following him on Twitter?
No,
I'm not. Photos?
I'm following goddamn Batman on Twitter. That's hilarious.
Croc on wild.
Well, see, Killer Croc on Twitter would probably just be hungry. Hungry.
No, follow the goddamn Batman on Twitter. That's the funny stuff.
I totally agree. Yeah.
But I'm kind of digging Lego Croc here on the Google Images.
Lego Croc.
That's menacing right there.
Yes.
Yeah. I like Finch's Etrigan a great deal.
No, that was probably my favorite Finch drawing in this whole thing was the Etrigan. No, that was a really nice interpretation. Yeah. I mean, standard, but standard in a good way. Sometimes I've seen Etrigan look almost more like a dragon than Etrigan, and you don't really get that here. He just looks like, you know, the demon that he's supposed to be.
But fierce, because a lot of times I think he becomes too cartoony. Like, I love the rhyming aspect of him. I think that's great, but I think you can still have the character look menacing when he's doing it. I think there's something creepier about it when he does. Like, this is somebody I want to see him rhyme because I'm going to get creeped out by it. And I like that. That's an important aspect, I think, of the character, because we want to believe that Blood doesn't want to be this guy. And when he looks like he's fun to hang with, there's something wrong.
See, now I'm just imagining Etrigan holding like a scotch and smoking a cigar and wearing like a Hugh Hefner jacket, sitting in a leisure chair.
Where was we've seen Etrigan recently and he didn't rhyme. I can't remember where it was, but I didn't really like that. I really like rhyming Etrigan. Right.
The last time I remember him not rhyming was in Shadow Pact, and that was because Blue Devil got the rhyming.
No, it's been more recent than that.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Since that Brave and the Bold with Aquaman came out, he was rhyming there, and that was a great use, I thought, what Straczynski did. But I think his next appearance after that, he wasn't rhyming, and it was kind of like, really? That's kind of his thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's the rapper of the DC Universe.
He is.
MC Etrigan. I would buy his album.
Come on, Jim. You know, that's what you got to do the next episode.
Oh, on Etrigan rap?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Sean's the rhymer of the group. You know, the openings, you've been doing some good rhymes.
I'm doing an Etrigan rap. You can do that.
But I'm thinking of all of Jim's songs over the years.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking rap, Jim song, there you go.
So where do we think this is going with issue 3 and beyond? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to. I know you're summing up with that part, but
yeah, sure.
I did like his gadget when he was escaping the Penguin. Like when they had him, you know, Bruce basically covered them, and then he shot out that wire thing, and you Penguin knew because of his experience. I love that Penguin knew. Penguin's like, wait, you know, I mean, he knows what's going on. He knows this is a bad gadget. He knows this is where Batman is going to get the upper hand on all of these thugs that he's got with him. And I loved how that played out because they don't have the experience with Bruce. They wouldn't know what was going to happen. But I not only do I love that it tangled them up, but I loved that as he was leaving, he hit the button and it shocked him. Because reading it, knowing what the amulet was doing to him and going back through that issue, I'm like, this was one of the first times we started to see what he was going through. I'm like, wow, that was cool.
All he needed was a note saying, courtesy of the friendly neighborhood Batman. But yeah, I loves me some good bat gadgets, and that was a nice touch there.
Yeah, that was a great moment. I did like that.
Yeah,
So it was a complete leg break.
The one thing that we haven't talked about, though, we've talked about the story, we've talked about the art, but taking the two issues that we have, can David Finch write?
He's getting there, I think. There's going to be a learning curve no matter what, because you know when you first see an artist go into the field of writing, I think it takes a while for him to really get his voice. But there's a decent enough story flow here, and enough of the characters don't sound like they're reading from a script when they talk, which is good. Because I hate it when that happens, when someone goes up to a character and it's like, I'm going to hit you now, and the other one's like, oh no, I'm about to be hit. And we don't really have that too much here. It feels like by, say, issue 5 or 6, maybe David Finch will have his voice down entirely and we'll have an actual, I guess, style of writing that you'd be able to say, oh, that's David Finch.
I think you're questioning, and I apologize again for cutting you off. You were asking, where do we think this is going with issue 3? And it really isn't just, for me, it isn't just issue 3. It's issue 3 and beyond.
Right.
I'm curious to see, is Dawn, are we going to see Dawn again? Because I think that's a real good possibility here. That might happen.
Yeah.
But what's the deal with the amulet? What is the history of it? Where is that coming from? Why is Etrigan so interested in it? What's going on with Ragman? These are all how these questions are answered as they're played out, because these are the questions that he's laid out right now. How they're answered along the way. And, how does Penguin factor into all that? Does Willie still? Obviously, I think that we're pretty set on that he and Croc are going to be a continuing part of this storyline.
Right.
How all these things converge and come together and how they pay off is going to answer a lot of those questions for me. I like that by issue 2 now I'm asking these questions, because I wasn't so much with issue 1. I was curious at the end of issue 1 to see, okay, how's Bruce going to get out of this mess, but I wasn't invested in the story. At the end of issue 2, I'm a lot more invested in this story. I'm asking questions now that I wasn't asking at the end of issue 1. So as a writer, we're seeing a build to the story that I'm liking. I'm going to be curious how the bi-monthly release is going to affect me on this. I'm going to compare this to another mini-series. This isn't a mini-series, but I mean the 6-issue arc. First Wave. I adored, by the time it was done, read the whole thing through, and I loved it. By the time we got to issue 3, I was taken out of it because of the delays. But reading it back again, it's Brian Azzarello. The artwork was gorgeous. It's, Rags Morales. It had all the right pieces. Delays on that one took me out of the story. So I'm going to be curious how a bi-monthly release on this is going to affect my overall being pulled into the story. I think, like you said earlier, Ian, I'm going to have to reread the issues as new ones are released to just remind myself, because of how much I'm reading.
Yeah.
Just to be pulled back in. Now, my enjoyment of doing all the rereading is going to be a big factor on whether or not it's good writing. If it's good writing, I'm going to enjoy rereading it. I'm not going to have an issue with that. If it's writing that's not so good, then it's going to take me out of it, and I'm just not going to have as much fun revisiting these characters and these locations he set up. I think I'm going to, though, because by issue 2, from issue 1, there's definitely if I'm going upstairs, I've taken a couple leaps now with issue 2. So I'm hoping that I get the same feel with issue 3, where we keep climbing up that ladder. And then I think I'll be very satisfied at the end if we do. So that's kind of my take. But I don't know, what does everybody else think?
Well, actually, I'm more wondering. Do you feel everyone's voice is right so far?
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm gonna actually say that I really like his writing and say yes, he can write, and I'm enjoying what he's doing. And especially, I was just about to say, going off what you said, Ian, that I like the fact that the voices that he's giving these different characters and the way they're presenting themselves, especially the supporting cast like Gordon and Alfred. Those are some great moments and dialogues with between Batman and them, and plus his interactions amongst themselves. So I thought that was a good sign of writing skills and writing style, is that not how does he write Batman, how does he write Batman beating up the people, how does he write the universe around Batman? And I'm liking that. And I think this is going to be a pretty solid story once all the pieces are together, once everything's brought into the fold.
Well, I hope for David Finch's sake it is, because it, depending on how this story turns out, depends on whether or not he gets more writing work. I would say that. It definitely, for a first work of a writer, it has to be good in order for you to get more work. And so far, I think he's showing enough chops where I would definitely give him more writing work after this to see just how much he's going to evolve as a writer.
And I would buy more stuff written by him. If he wrote a story and it was art by somebody else, I would pick it up based on just his written story, mm-hmm. because I'm enjoying it. That I am enjoying when I'm reading it. You know, when I have it in hand, I went one and two, boom, boom. I was like, this is a pretty cool story. I like this groove he's got going. So for me, he's one of those names that's now on the list of people I would pick up for their story style.
I hope his growth is the same as Brent. Brent made a great comparison earlier to Tony Daniel. I thought Tony Daniel's arc, where we were trying to find out who Black Mask is, I thought was brilliant. I was trying to figure it out along the way, and I was really enjoying the ride of looking for clues, and I thought he laid out some great clues to who Black Mask was. But that, I think, for us as readers, in a detective story, in a Batman book, you want to try and follow the clues. Whether you're right or wrong, you want to try and do that. And I think that's a example of an artist who's shown a lot of growth as a writer. I'm hoping David Finch shows the same amount of growth, because I think we have a potential here if he can figure out a nice balance between writing and the art, and with some fill-ins that, you know, kind of like, what's the formula? Where do we need to do fill-ins in order to make this work so it's released timely enough? Mm-hmm. If they can get that in there, this could be really cool.
So what do you think, Brent?
I have to go with Sean. I hope he does adjust that learning curve quite well, like Tony Daniel's done. Even Tony Daniel's art, the new bulky style he's been doing ever since Bruce came back, I'm not really too much of a fan of, at least on Dick. Because it was just too much of a shift for me, I guess. But if that's what he has to do when he's inking his own work and he's writing consistently now and getting it out, then that's okay. Because I would rather have good, consistent art on a consistent basis rather than something take a hit for a more detailed approach. So if David Finch wants to dial back some of the details or, you know, put in more shadows and still be David Finch, that's fine with me.
Yeah, and he has before. That's
when he gets the book out on time. Because, frankly, I would rather see David Finch succeed with great art and a good story rather than succeed just for good art and his book be late. You know, because it's his own battle to lose, because if he succeeds, then he goes on from here to do other things. I mean, look at Tony Daniel. They gave him the reins to Batman, you know, of that book, basically, because of his success on his first arc, you know, Battle of Cal notwithstanding. So I'm hoping that David Finch gets the same opportunity, and that way more artists look at DC as a place to do that, because they're not doing that at Marvel.
Yeah,
you know, but it's David Finch's battle to lose, because if he does, it's DC's too, I guess. But if David Finch loses, it kind of sets a precedent. Well, not everybody can do it, and that DC is not the place for this. But if he does, then I think it's a good thing for the industry and getting more ideas out there.
I think it's great just how many artists have become writers who work for DC. I mean, even over the years. I mean, think about, you know, Phil Jimenez and George Perez has written some stuff, and that you know, Tony Daniel is
Phil Hester.
Phil Hester, Scott Collins.
Yeah.
Scott Collins is a perfect example. He was an artist for so long, and then he started writing, and some of the stuff he's written I've really enjoyed. So this is a good thing, I think. Yeah, sure. Sometimes it'll mean that they're not able to do art, but you know what? If their writing is good, I could care less, as long as you have a good artist to go along with it.
Mm.
So, yeah. That's
Jim, do you like bulky dick? Brent doesn't, but
oh, that's the line of the show.
I was wondering who was gonna throw out that line.
Jim's a length man, not curvy.
He's afraid of it.
And to think bulky Bruce is not funny, but bulky Dick sure as hell is. Oh, boy. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I don't know. I really, it's really fun to get like different perspectives on this, because it's a character obviously that is very important to all of us in very different ways, you know, as far as what we're enjoying here. And I don't know, I've really enjoyed chatting with you guys about this character, because it is one of those books, and I if issue two hadn't come out, I might be in a very different place about it right now. So issue two for me was a selling point on this series so far.
Well, then it's a good thing we waited so long to record this. Well, I would say out of the two books that we talked about together on your show and ours, I'm definitely much more into Batman Inc. than I am in The Dark Knight. However, Dark Knight would probably be about a 3 out of 5 for me. Like it's not the bottom of the barrel. It's definitely in the middle. And like I said, I might very well wait for trade just for this to continue, because budget wise, I think I could very easily cut this and go back to it later when the story is complete and get a complete opinion on it, then wait for it to come out if the releases are going to be spotty. But you know, we'll see down the road, because I think I have issue 3 pre-ordered, but if I don't, then I'm just gonna wait for trade and see how it turns out in the end. Jim, final thoughts?
I'm enjoying this. It's, as I said, you know, periodically, I've got so much bad stories that I can go to that the delays on this, you know, while it took me out of the story, it didn't make me hate the title, because I have this other stuff that I can deal with. But after this issue 2, I'm kind of curious about the story. I think it's locked in my head now, so when 3 comes out, I probably won't need to reread 1 and 2 just to remember what happened. So I think as by the end of the first story arc is when I'll really be able to make a solid assessment, but I'm saying good.
All right. Did you ever come to your conclusion as to which of the you know, new start Batman books was your favorite?
Oh, that's a toughie. It honestly changes every time I read a different story. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really digging Detective. You know, just the whole mystery side of it, and seeing you know, Dick Grayson actually be more of a detective style Batman, whereas I do enjoy that he is more acrobatic, more agile, more friendlier interaction with the police. But I do like seeing the fact that he does have deductive skills.
Right.
So that's something I'm enjoying about you know, Detective. But Batman and Robin just has Damian, and I love that dynamic between the two of them. I've always been a Robin fan over a Batman fan, you know, especially, you know, with Tim, and seeing Damian come in the role and just make it his own, you know, version of Robin has really been something I've enjoyed. So for me, because of Damian, I'm going to say Batman and Robin is my top spot, but Detective does have some cool story elements, and I've Batman itself, just a regular Batman title, has been always a fun read for me. So it's, you know, when a new issue for one of them comes out, it gets put on the top of the stack.
Cool. Brent, final thoughts?
I'm along the same lines as you, except that I'm going to keep getting the issues at least until the arc ends.
Okay.
Because I know I've pre-ordered the other ones.
Yeah. See, I'm not even sure if I did. I might have actually just decided to pick them all up. Because I know I didn't have issue 2 pre-ordered, so I had to go to Jim Hanley's and pick it up over there. But I forget if I had 3 or not. But we'll see. Either way. All right. Well, this is officially the shortest episode we have ever had with Sean and Jim on a call. So I want to commend you two.
It's a time limit.
I know. I want to commend you two for sticking to that. That was very brave of you.
Well, we're brave and bold.
Oh, jeez. I'm not backing that statement up.
Sean, think of how much less editing hours you would have to do if you did a time limit on your show.
Oh.
It wouldn't be as fun, though.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
If we had time limits, we wouldn't have ever come up with the Muppet Secret Six.
That is true. And I think the entire world would be a sadder place.
You know, it's... Do you guys have a favorite Bat book? You asked an interesting question there, because you asked it of Jim. Mine right now is Detective.
Okay.
That to me is, I'm reading all of them. I can actually put them in order. Detective Comics, Batman Inc., Batman, Batman and Robin, and this one. If I'm putting just the Batman books,
right,
in, that would be my order of, you know, enjoyment out of them. I'm not considering dropping any of them. I like reading them monthly, but that is my, if I had to go to one, it would be Detective.
Right.
What about you guys?
Well, for me, probably number one on the list would be Batman Inc., just because of how much enjoyment I've had out of each issue of that. And then after that, because I'm not reading all the books, but probably directly after that would probably actually be Red Robin and then Batgirl and then Dark Knight. Because out of the ones that I'm reading, that I think is my reading order.
You're not reading Batman and Robin?
I'm sorry, I completely forgot about Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin, put that in the two-hole. Put everything else down from there. I'm reading Batman and Robin, and I'm enjoying it. Tomasi has been doing a good job on the book so far. And before that, obviously, Morrison was Morrison, so, you know, big shock. Brent?
Yeah, I'll have to go with Batman Inc., Batman and Robin, and Red Robin, with everything else kind of middling in between.
Okay.
Are you guys all reading Batgirl?
I am. Yeah.
No.
Are you reading that, Brent?
No, I'm not.
That's a fun book.
trust me, we've been saying that to him over and over again, and on our you know wrap up of 2010, it was both Brandon and I were over and over again commenting on how good it was. But
I read the crossover it had with Red Robin, the two issue thing it had a couple months back, and it was okay. I could see where people would get a lot of enjoyment out of it. It's just I've never really given a crap about Batgirl, so honestly, that's where that comes from. Whether it be Stephanie or Cassandra or Barbara, so
that's because
you don't
like
Bulky Dick either. I'm sorry.
It was either Batgirl or Azrael, and look how that turned out.
Oh
so,
God!
Obviously, I picked the wrong horse.
Yeah, you sure as hell did.
I liked Azrael, though.
Yeah.
I did, too, but it kind of ended on a whimper.
Yeah, it was where it was going, I was like, oh, no, I want this book to continue. It was really, and I think it ended on a whimper because there was a big plan for where he was going to go with it, and we just never got to see it, unfortunately.
It was like, Jesus isn't real, God is a lie, what? No! Cliffhanger.
and to say it on the episode, since Brent brought it up, you know, a couple of episodes back, how he, you know, just thinks that Batgirl is going to wind up crossing over with Morning Glories. The cover of Batman Inc. number 9 would suggest that that is indeed what happens, proving that DC Comics listens to this show and says exactly what we say and does it.
Well, I just saw the next preview for the Batgirl issue, and Ramon Box is on art, so judging by his previous history with Bat books, I'd say Batgirl is in for a strong upswing. Once he gets off the book, based off of Red Robin.
Oh, God. No comment. I'm just going to hold that back. Yeah, well. So, fellas, what's upcoming on Raging Bullets?
Jim, what are we doing next? When is this coming out?
within the next week or so.
Okay.
We promise.
We're talking a lot of Flashpoint. We're actually following all the teasers, you know, that are going out there and kind of speculating on where we think it's going. Because it is one of those series where it seems the more they reveal, the more questions you have versus the more, like, I know what's going on, which is good. I actually think that
they're not revealing anything. They're just asking a bunch of questions. Well, but that's their solicitations, the questions.
What is Flashpoint? Where are we? Who am I? Who are you?
But you're still seeing cover images.
Why do we have so many books?
Character studies of these characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's what is Aquaman's role? What is Wonder Woman's role? The two of them in the teaser are supposed to be getting married, but how is that going to be if, you know, she's tearing apart the world because her mom died and he's all mad because, you know, because he's Aquaman? I don't know.
Because they gave him a haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, see, I like the regulation haircut.
I know you would say that, man.
I don't.
and he has both arms. I mean, and both hands. I can't stand for that. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I prefer my Aquaman's missing a hand.
Maybe he can get a tree stump hand from Swamp Thing.
Maybe.
God, what a waste.
And that would be racingbullets.com.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. And make sure to check out all of their C2E2 covers as well. I know you guys had a lot of interviews and stuff that you released on the feed.
Yeah, C2E2 was a lot of fun. So mm-hmm. it was a great convention this year. So.
Oh yeah, no, had a great time as people who listened to this show probably found out. Upcoming for me next, and possibly Sean, that's to be determined, but hopefully he will indeed be able to make it, is a CGS Super Show, which is going to be April 30th and May 1st. I'm going to be in town on the 28th, actually, Thursday the 28th, and I'll be there for Friday's Third and Spruce, and then Saturday the con, and Third and Spruce again, and we'll do our usual Saturday recording, and then we'll be leaving on Sunday. I'm actually going to be moderating a panel this year at Super Show, which is going to be the usual like podcasting roundtable thing that people have been running the past couple of years. And this one is mainly just going to be, you know, really just off the cuff. If you're a fan of podcasting or you're a podcaster yourself, you can just show up and just basically just talk trade and, you know, talk whatever we want to talk on the episode, because it will be released, the Comic Timing episode.
Are you the moderator because you're no longer a podcaster because you haven't put out an episode in 3 months?
That's the exact reason. No. No, it's more that I keep showing up to these things, so they might as well put me to work. I think that's the exact reason. But it should be a lot of fun. We're not sure what day it's going to be yet, but probably Saturday, I'm guessing. But once we have an official time and date, I'll make sure to let everybody know. And Brent, anything you have to report?
Nope.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's it here for that. Yet again, thanks for joining us, Sean and Jim. Always great to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. And maybe we'll have a good old 3-hour romp sometime in the near future.
It's not hard to do, is it?
Exactly. All right. Well, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com, graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. A reminder that you can now find Comic Timing at comictiming.net, so you no longer have to remember that tongue twister of speakgeekspeak.com. Comictiming.net directs directly to the Comic Timing site, so if you want to link to it on your site, so you can go right ahead. Please make sure to check us out at comicspodcast.com, Comics Podcast Network, as we are proud members of that, and the League of Comic Book Podcasts over comicbooknoise.com/league. So once again, for Sean and Jim and Brent, I'm Ian Levesey, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. And that.
But which actually it's where we met. You're not gonna be at Super Show, right, Jim?
Yeah, I'm out.
Oh, you're out?
Yeah.
You knew that just right.
I have a first confirmation.
Casino.
Yeah, I'm on my phone Skype.
Okay.
I'm just going to plug in my regular headset and not dork with this H2 since we need to get going.
You know, you actually sound really good right now.
Really?
Shockingly, yeah.
Huh. Brett, I think you sound good all the time.
Thank you, Sean. Good to hear from you guys.
I'm here for you, man. I'm not a fair weather friend.
I'm sorry, I'm a fair weather listener. You guys have put out so many episodes. I haven't listened to them in months. And it's the same with our episodes, except we don't put any out, so no one listens to us in months.
Yeah, well, I've now got Mocha interviews to intersperse with my C2E2 interviews, which seems to happen every year. So that'll be fun.
Yes, that will be fun when it comes out in 2012.
Party hard. So Sean, did you happen to see where I was yesterday?
Where were you yesterday?
I was at the BBC America premiere for the new season of Doctor Who.
Oh, don't tell me anything.
I will not tell you anything. All I will tell you is that it was amazing.
But tell me everything, though.
Okay.
Don't tell Sean, but tell me.
Spock dies.
so freaking psyched, it's not even funny.
My friend got there literally at 10:30 in the morning for a 7 o'clock premiere. And,
wow.
And and we still wound up in the third theater. That's how many people were there.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
For Doctor Who?
For Doctor Who, yeah.
Seriously?
Who?
Who? What? Who?
Third base.
Oh, but
yeah, Brent, if you want to plug your headset in and shit, just go right ahead. I mean, we can always put you back in the conference.
And you don't need to shit if you don't want to. You can just put your headset in. It's great.
That's fine. Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to restart my computer so I can do it that way rather than, because I'm on Wi-Fi on the phone right now. So, and that fixed my internet problem, so they shouldn't go out on us again like they did last time.
What was happening?
Someone with the router. I don't know. So I called, or I texted, or chatted with tech support, since that seems to be quicker than actually talking to a person nowadays. And they had engaged in the settings or something.
Nice. Yeah. Oh. So Stephen Broom just sent me an image from the upcoming DC previews, and apparently your prediction of Batgirl joining Morning Glories is actually kind of true. Still there.
It is.
Yeah. No. Because the cover of Batman Inc. number 9 is Batman punching out schoolgirls and Batgirl doing the same. So it looks like she's gonna indeed go to the.
Oh, I did see it.
Yeah.
It's good to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're doing the whole like disco thing with your voice. So yeah. Whenever that computer's restarted, it'll probably be good.
I just thought he was auto-tuned.
Yeah. I'll hop off this thing.
That would be great.
It does sound a little bit like auto-tuned. Not even.
Wake up in the morning feeling like Mick Jagger.
If only we could have you auto-tuned.
and not to give away any further spoilers or any spoilers whatsoever, but in the Q&A, Moffat said that the cliffhangers for episode 22 ain't nothing compared to the cliffhanger for episode 6.
Well, that's where they're splitting, right? Episode 6, and then they're going to come back for the second part of the season?
Yep. That's where they're doing it. And the split is actually, from the looks of it, pretty much going to correspond with the start of Torchwood.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so it'll be that like nice like in betweener where you literally won't even notice that you're missing.
So this will be that nice like in betweener where you won't even notice that you're missing your.
Great, now I get to hear myself. Echo.
At least you're not on.
Yeah, we figured that out.
How are we doing this?
How are we doing what?
Well, I mean, how do you want to format? I mean, are we focusing on one, focusing on two, or are we just kind of jumping off?
Probably a general conversation between about one and two, and then maybe go, you know, issue by issue a little bit, but not like your way, not like, you know, panel by panel.
Well, you said you want to be done around 9, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but again, if we do run later, bro, we'll just exit Brent out, and that'll be fine. But yeah, no, it's just pretty much just go through 1 and 2 and give our thoughts and opinions.
I honestly think we can probably do that in 2 hours.
Yeah, I'd say so. That and, I've got dinner at one point. Chris made a big chicken.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, the best part about her being unemployed is that she cooks a lot.
Well, there you go.
Actually, I thought she was in Cleveland for a while there. When I was at work, I was, you know, we have a coffee shop in the building, you know, where I work at, and I'm standing in line, and I could have swore I heard her voice, you know, talking about, you know, getting this coffee, and I could have swore it was her. Same voice inflections, everything. I quickly turned around because I knew you know, she was looking. I didn't know if maybe she got a job in the area. And I'm looking, and it wasn't her, obviously. You know, this lady just gives me this look like, yeah, what's your problem? And I'm like, oh, you sound like someone I know. And I quickly turn back.
You guys know Brent is gone again, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. No, he was switching from his, his phone to not his phone.
So she's got a voice.
I'm back auto-tuned. Yay! You can say it's in your context now.
Let me call you guys right back.
Okay. How are you doing?
Exterminate! Brent, you there?
Is he? Yes.
Okay.
On the headset?
Yes.
Yay.
That microphone was picking up everything.
Oh, God. We'll figure it out someday.
Someday. When we have time to tweak it.
For now, this is fine. Okay, so I'll count it down. Let me make sure what episode this is.
We did tell them how we're doing this, right? Review corner style?
Yeah.
We don't go panel by panel, sentence by sentence?
Yes. That is what we were discussing while you were not on the call just now. So,
okay.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about us going into every single panel.
I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about Sean.
You really don't listen. We don't do that every episode.
Not every episode.
Well, I got the Gail Simone interview next on my queue, so
yeah, I did listen to that, by the way, guys. So that came out really well.
Yeah, I had no idea what she was gonna do.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was nice to have the role reversal going on.
Did she go through your life month by month, week by week?
She did. Day by day, hour by hour.
Day by day.
This must be
we won't have podcast again for years.
All right, I'm gonna intro us in. Brent, this is gonna be episode 120, so we'll release this right after I'm done with C2E2 and Mocha.
All right. Are you sure? Because I'm off Friday. It'll get out by then if you really want it.
Yeah, no, I know. Edit it, get it ready and everything, and if anything, we'll just sit in the queue until we're ready to put the other one out.
Are you going to have the other one out?
Yeah. Yeah.
When?
No, by the end of the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Count it down. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2...